Following the spike in unaccompanied minors crossing the Mexican border with the United States last summer, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, established, Jim, these family detention centers to hold parents and their families. Now, a federal judge later issued a tentative ruling that these detention facilities violated standards for children.
Well, this week, ICE announced changes to its policies that could affect conditions in family detention centers, as well as how long families are actually held there. Joe Rosen is an immigration lawyer in Atlanta who's visited one of these family detention centers, and he joins us on the phone now. First, Mr. Rosen, thanks so much for taking the time today. We appreciate it.
No, glad to be here.
Well, to start us off, first describe how people end up in one of these family detention centers.
Well, most of the folks that are there are women and children accompanying them that have been fleeing either gang violence, domestic violence, or gang violence in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. They transport themselves up to Mexico, and then they walk across the border, and generally they'll just simply surrender themselves to Border Patrol.
What's it like inside of one?
Inside the detention center? Well, I did a volunteer week down at Artesia, and it's like a minimum security prison camp. You know, armed security officers all around, guards around, extremely controlled entry. It's like being in jail. And particularly disheartening is when you're in a situation like that as an attorney and you're sitting there with your clients and they're 6 and 8 and 10 year old kids and they're essentially have been put into jail by the U.S. government.
And Mr. Rosen, when you talk about having armed individuals there, is that protection for people getting in or getting out? I'm a little unclear about why they would need armed, I guess, officers in a sense.
It makes no sense. Essentially, it's for, you know, so that the detainees don't escape. I mean, there's really no concern about anybody coming in. It's just kind of the standard staffing you would see at a prison. And then the even more disheartening thing is it was bad enough at Artesia where I volunteered, where all the security officers and the security personnel were all ICE personnel. But facilities like Dilley and Carnes, which are the two main family detention centers now, they're contract prisons. You know, and the U.S. government is spending, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars per day, probably, but I think the cost is $150 per detainee to private prisons that are for-profit prisons that are maintaining these things. And, again, you know, barbed wire, armed guards, and it's all going to a for-profit prison system that incredibly heavily lobbies the U.S. government to maintain people in detention.
Mr. Rosen, are you aware if the United States had some prior regulations and I guess, standards of care that these detention centers were supposed to uphold?
Yeah, there was actually a settlement in a case called the Flores decision, about a year or two ago. And the settlement was the agreement that anytime the U.S. government is detaining children in these circumstances, it has to be a facility that meets the state licensing facilities for children to be detained in. They have to provide schooling. They have to provide, counseling. They have to provide, you know, very kind of safe, humane settings, if you will. And the government chose not to do that in these situations. They took the position that since these children are with their mothers, they're not unaccompanied children, and they're not covered by the Flores settlement. And then some of the recent litigation has said, no, that's incorrect. You know, these kids do need to be treated in the same way as was outlined in the Flores decision.
So just to be clear, they are not going to school, and they really don't have any semblance of a normal life?
No real semblance of a normal life. I can't speak as to whether or not school is specifically being provided right now. When I was at Artesia, it was not being provided. It was simply a large detention center. The situation in Dilley and Carnes, you know, has been best described in some of the recent litigation as unlawful, inhumane, and unnecessary to detain kids that way. There was a hunger strike by some of the mothers about 3-4 weeks ago, which ICE ended up responding to by putting the mothers in isolation, threatening to separate from their children. It really escalated to the point where a class action suit was filed in federal court. And the U.S. government took the incredibly extreme position of saying that, well, these detainees, even though they're people, they're not covered by the U.S. Constitution and they have no First Amendment rights. and they have no right to protest even peacefully their detention, and therefore the court case should be thrown out. Which, you know, the really interesting part of that is you have the president saying that, you know, these immigration aspects are just really inhumane, and that his concentration is on deporting felons, not families. And yet at the same time, you have government attorneys going in and arguing that these families are really not even to be considered people in terms of the protection of the First Amendment.
We're speaking with Atlanta immigration lawyer Joe Rosen, talking about family detention centers. These are facilities where people who have come to the United States that may, and to be clear, they're waiting for either the further processing or to even attend some type of immigration hearing. Is that the purpose of these as well?
Yeah, invariably, all these folks are really coming in. They're fleeing violence or persecution in their home countries. And I guess the big revelation to me when I volunteered down there for a week was I really was a relative believer that a lot of these people were really fleeing economic issues and coming to the U.S. for economic reasons. And without fail, I mean, the 50 to 60 people I worked with in a week, everyone is fleeing either gang violence, domestic violence, family violence, and the governments down there, Guatemala and Honduras, are just unable to protect them or unwilling to protect them. The gangs are really kind of controlling the situation. So these folks are coming to the United States. They have a putative claim to asylum, and they come in, they have a credible fear interview, and then they're awaiting an asylum hearing. The government has placed all these facilities in places that are barely accessible to legal counsel. Before the attorneys started volunteering and going there on their own, it was almost a 90 to 100% return rate of these folks back to their home countries. Once the attorneys got there, I think the first 10 asylum cases that were tried, in every one of them, it was found that the folks did deserve asylum and could remain in the U.S. And then what further exacerbates the situation is that the delays, if these people are in fact bonded out, I have a case here in Atlanta where the woman has her initial asylum hearing is in November 2019. So you're having folks that if they can't make bond, they're detained for excessive periods of time, and the folks that do make bond are kind of living here in limbo while they're waiting an asylum hearing. They can go on for 3 or 4 years.
That was my next question, Mr. Rosen. On the average, how long were these families having to stay at these detention centers? And just to be clear, you said, for example, there was a woman whose hearing won't be till 2019?
Yeah, she's been bonded out.
Okay.
She's here in the Atlanta area, but she, you know, literally will be living in limbo, you know, until 2019. There was a case that I just saw listed on one of the listservs for the immigration attorneys that are volunteering on these things, and a woman just won her asylum hearing. She's from Guatemala, and she and her two children have been detained for 9 months. So this is a woman with a, you know, what ended up as a valid claim to asylum, fleeing persecution. She comes to the United States, and she and her children are essentially put in prison. You know, you can call it a family detention center, but it's jail. You're not free to come or go. And, you know, after being detained like that for 9 months, she's granted asylum. It's just an inhumane way to treat folks that are fleeing persecution.
Now, we have heard from ICE who say, look, we're going to change things. We're going to address these issues. What do those changes look like, and how do you think they will improve the situation, if at all?
Yeah, and, you know, I think on May 13th, they came out with an announcement that they were going to have enhanced oversight, safe and humane facilities. And, you know, there's simply no way to do that. It's simply an unlawful, inhumane, and unnecessary way to detain children and mothers. The Catholic College of Cardinals just came out, and they ended up saying, look, you know, there are ways to handle this. You can put them on community supervision. You can put them in community houses. Almost everyone that I dealt with down there had a relative in the United States that was willing to provide assistance to them. If, in fact, these folks were granted bond, asylum seekers, despite the government, you know, press releases to the contrary, invariably, especially if they have counsel, show up for their asylum hearings. So rather than keeping these people detained at, you know, in for-profit prisons, it would be easier to simply grant them low bonds, let them live with family members in the United States, and let them go through their court process. And part of this goes back to an original government stand, which was tossed out by the court. Originally, the government was arguing that you had to keep these people, these women, these mothers, these children, you had to keep them locked up because if you didn't, it would encourage more people to come to the United States, and therefore you had to detain them. That was brought to a court's attention, and the holding of the court, the federal court, about 2 months ago, was you can't keep people locked up as a deterrent to other people. You have to look at individual situations. And the government argument was, you know, these people pose a national security threat because they'll encourage other people to come. And it's a little disheartening as an attorney to be sitting in court with a six-year-old kid and have the government saying, this six-year-old child is a national security threat to the United States, when in fact this is a six-year-old kid whose mother may have been raped by a gang because she wouldn't contribute money to the gang or she wouldn't smuggle drugs for the gang, and the mother fled with the child. And, you know, that's not a national security threat.
Mr. Rosen, we're coming up on a short of time here. Let me ask you this, but based on this ruling from the federal judge, what changes can we see? Can we expect to see some changes in these family detention centers?
Yeah, I think you're beginning to see lower bonds for them. So some of these outrageous bonds or these decisions to hold people without bond, I think you're going to see the bonds reduced to maybe $5,000 to $8,000, which is still unattainable for a lot of folks, but at least a little more reasonable for the families to raise. Hopefully what you're going to see is some softening of the facilities. But, you know, if you're in jail, you're in jail. You know, to provide school or toys or, you know, better food for folks that are in jail when, in fact, they can be with their families. I mean, picture a family that has been subjected to extortion, rape, murder, threats. They flee that country. They come to the United States thinking that, you know, this is a country that's going to protect them from persecution and from degradations. And instead, they're put in a private prison facility. It doesn't matter how you dress up that facility. It's still a jail. And the really despicable part of the United States action on it is it's a for-profit jail. You know, you get corporations like the Corrections Corporation of America that are making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and lobbying the government to keep these people locked up. And the government's just simply acquiescing to it.
Well, we're going to have to end there. I'm sorry, we've run out of time. That's Joel Rosen, an Atlanta immigration lawyer, former U.S. Customs Special Agent, talking about family detention centers. We do appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Mr. Rosen.